Welcome to the Social Network Show, coming to you from the studios of KUNV and the Hank Greenspun School of Journalism and Media Studies at University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Your host, experimental psychologist Jane Karwoski, brings you the latest insights, comments, and analysis from leaders in the fast-changing world of social networks. And now, Dr. J and the Social Network Show, copyright 2015.
Do you dread that get-acquainted party at the beginning of the year, or when there are a lot of new hires in your company? You know how to act, basically. I mean, it's not as if you're going to shock everyone with inappropriate behavior, like finding a stool to stand on and reciting in a loud voice an interesting snippet from your life that you have prepared for just such an occasion. No, you'll reserve that for an appropriate moment if and when one comes along. First, you'll greet your hosts, maybe introduce yourself to someone in the vicinity, compliment the decor, the food, and then you'll listen. Let's face it, this is a public event. No one has a reasonable expectation of privacy. So attending to a conversation and gently entering into it with an encouraging remark is polite behavior. After all, even though you may feel that everyone is more at ease than you are, that is almost never the case. Today, you will hear from Spider Graham about how to apply this reasoning in the online environment. Spider is a 20-year veteran of digital media buying, selling, and production. He is CEO of TrainingCraft LLC, a company he founded to train and consult with publishers and advertisers with regard to digital advertising, marketing, and sales. He works with the Interactive Advertising Bureau, e-consultancy, and delivers training to Comcast, Politico, and American Cities Business Journals. He is co-author of Taking Down Goliath, Digital Marketing Strategies for Beating Competitors with 100 Times More Your Spending Power. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Spider.
Thanks, Dr. J. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. You know, we've heard numerous times that when trying out, for instance, a new social media channel, that you should just listen for a while to get the hang of it. Your ultimate desire might be to share great news about a product, service, or even a movement for a great cause. But like the party analogy, you don't want to be just broadcasting. You want to learn what potential customers or partners need and want. But here's the problem for me. Just telling us to listen first, it's just so vague. In order to know how to listen, we need to know what do we listen to, where do we listen to it, and how long do we listen to it before we join in. We see all over the place this join the conversation. Well, where is the right conversation taking place?
It's a great question. And obviously, the analogy of, you know, marketing like your party is trying to step away from older models. I mean, for so many years, marketers were in the business of interrupting whatever you were doing to get their message in front of you. Mm-hmm. And the equivalent of that is walking to a party where you don't know anybody, you have no idea what conversation is already taking place, and yelling something like, "Hey, everybody, listen to me, I want to share something with you."
Mm-hmm.
You know, in polite company, no one's going to think you're polite. It really comes across poorly. And there was a wonderful cartoon that Hugh McLeod, who is the creator of GapingVoid.com, put out several years ago, that said that if people talk to you the way that advertisers talk to you, you'd punch them in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the challenge we have is that for so many years, it was really the only way we could get our message in front of people, but it was largely anonymous, because I never saw you read my ad in the magazine. I never saw you watch my television spot or listen to my radio spot. And so there was a certain level of detachment from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, when we look at the online environment, it's a different place, because everything that we do is based upon a point of interactivity. And so to go in and say, "Hey, shut up, everybody, because what you're talking about right now isn't as important as what I want to say to you," just doesn't play so well.
All right.
So getting back to your question about the conversation, you know, if we look at how organically we approach a party, let's say we go to a party, we don't know anybody, perhaps the host or hostess has invited us. But we would generally walk about, and we would look for some sort of a cue, you know, whatever it is that's going to help us find our way into the conversation, whether it's walking up to another person who seems to be holding back and introducing yourself and getting a conversation started. We look for points of commonality. We look for things that we can share with one another. And over time, going back and forth, we're able to create more of a picture of who they are, what they're interested in, who we are, what we do, as a quid pro quo kind of relationship. But we can also walk up to a group of two or three people having a conversation, and by listening, we can get a better sense of, first of all, what the conversation's about. And it would be horribly awkward and inappropriate to walk up to people who are having a conversation and just start a non sequitur of whatever was on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, you know, from a social media standpoint, there are more opportunities to go in there and have a genuine conversation with people. Now, a lot of it's going to take some effort. It's not like the world is coming to you. You have to still go out and look for the conversations. But using things like keywords, if you were to, you know, use something like TweetDeck to monitor keywords that were appropriate to your business or your brands, and, you know, as these tweets come up, to share them or to reply to them or comment on them in some way, or do the same thing with blog posts, you can create a meaningful dialogue with other people and get them to start thinking about who you are and what you bring to the table. Now, it's a softer science in a lot of ways. It really is kind of what we're seeing in the whole realm of native advertising, where it's more about providing information and understanding that people can use as opposed to hitting them over the head with your brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it always goes back to the idea that, you know, this isn't your father's marketing anymore. It's not about getting in people's faces as much as it is about listening first and trying to get a better understanding of what people want and are talking about and are interested in before you join the conversation.
Okay, so this sounds like you're talking about this on a one person at a time type of proposition, one tweet and one blog post or one comment on a blog post. Is that what you mean?
Well, in a lot of ways, yes, because the shift has gone in that direction, because all marketing online, for example, is personal marketing. Uh-huh. And it all is based on one-to-one. You're not reaching a mass audience anymore. You're reaching people one at a time. Now, maybe you're reaching people one at a time with the same ad. But it's based upon their areas of interest. It's based upon the content of the pages that they're visiting, et cetera. Now, once again, it depends on where they see these things. But the idea that we're reaching a broad range of people all at once really, you know, from an online standpoint, no longer applies. Of course, still there in the broadcast world. But the broadcast world is also learning how to do a better job of engaging people and getting them involved in a brand by pushing them toward their online properties. And we see this all the time. We see hashtags. We see things that are pushing us through Shazam. We see television spots that are always pointing to the URL, the domain of the brand, that kind of thing, so that the conversation can start, if you will, in traditional media, television, radio, print, but it can continue in a place where it can be more dynamic, but also allow the brand and the consumer to start that conversation with one another and to have some sort of give and take.
You know, as you mentioned that, I thought of one of our shows on the social network station is the Hashtag Show. And Lori, the host of that show, has created a search engine called Hash At It, and it will take you with a keyword, it'll take you not only to Twitter, but all the various social media that in one search. So you don't have to go to each one and search. So that would cut down the labor on that.
Yeah, we talk about the conversation. I think in a lot of ways, you know, in our industry, we talk about it rather cavalierly, like this is a really simple thing to do.
Yeah.
Starting a conversation is not a simple thing to do.
Well, and it sounds very time-consuming, is it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it depends on how well you do it. So for example, if I go create a YouTube channel and I create some compelling and interesting and useful videos, mm-hmm. of me talking about, you know, digital marketing best practices or whatever topic, and I get people engaged and there's some sort of response, you know, one of the beautiful things about something like YouTube is that I can ask people to say, hey, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
You know, put your notes down below. And hopefully, if you don't have too many trolls telling you you're horrible, you can at least start a dialogue back and forth in that space that everyone sees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily one-to-one, but you're starting to choose the people that you want to speak to because they're self-selecting as well. And if we think about this, I mean, this is really what marketers have been trying to do since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Marketers have not been trying to reach everybody because not everybody cares. But they've been reaching everybody by default because it was the only way they could reach the people they wanted because they didn't know how to sort those people from the whole. Well, except now we're at a place where I can go out there and by creating a social media channel like YouTube or a Facebook page or a Twitter feed, whatever it is, I can start to pull toward me the people who are most interested in the types of products and services that I have to offer. So it's not a matter of reaching everybody. It's a matter of reaching the right people. But I end up doing it one at a time, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I have them in, it's almost like having a posse. You're pulling together your group of people. And, you know, we do this through email all the time. We're just, okay, here's my email list. Here are the people who have opted in to hear from me on a regular basis. And it makes for a much easier conversation because now we're in a place where the people we're talking to have already been vetted. They already know about who we are and what we bring to the table from a marketing standpoint. They've already expressed interest in learning more. So it's not like we're constantly beating the bushes trying to find somebody who might care. We already have people who do care. And now it's just a matter of keeping a good conversation going so that we can cultivate a relationship. And, you know, over time, the conversation is really just the first step. Getting back to the party analogy for a moment, when we go in and have a conversation with someone, it allows us to share information back and forth, and it also allows us to assess value. You know, what is it that you can do for me? What is it I can do for you? And out of that party, there may be an opportunity to say, well, you know what, here's my business card. Why don't you give me a call on Monday? I'd like to set up a meeting with you to meet thus and such.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the day, business is really about conversion. So
right.
It starts with a conversation. It starts with that fact-finding and you know, a relationship. And it ends somewhere down the line with someone saying, okay, let's work together.
Okay. So how does this change the fundamental sales funnel that we see a lot?
Wow. Well, I mean, I think it's actually a huge benefit, but it's more complicated.
Okay.
So
you know what? I think we should go into that in the second half of the show,
let's
actually.
Let's take our break, and
yeah.
I'd love to jump in on the funnel.
Okay. And we're only halfway through in the second half. Spider's going to share more effective ways of attracting and engaging online customers, and we'll start out with the funnel. This is Dr. J, and you're listening to The Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Not all criminals carry a gun or a knife. Some simply need to pick up the phone or ring a doorbell. In times like these, senior citizens are often the targets of con artists, hawking shady investment deals and phony charities. Be wary of strangers in your neighborhood soliciting services or asking for money. Many cons come in the way of phony home repair services. These thieves offer major home repairs at bargain prices, but they end up taking your money and never finishing the work. Don't become a victim. Be skeptical of offers that are too good to be true. Never allow anyone to force you to sign something and never give personal information to people you don't know. Get estimates and never pay in advance. If you suspect fraud, get the contractor's license plate number and call the police immediately. If something doesn't seem right, it's probably not. Protect yourself. Visit ncpc.org to learn more. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where you are hearing from Spider Graham, co-author of Taking Down Goliath. Spider, once we we're talking about the way this new approach of just getting away from broadcasting, which is pretty fundamental in digital marketing and new marketing, wherever you're doing it. There's a tendency toward more interactivity and creating a conversation or joining conversation with your audience. How is that affecting that traditional sales funnel that we often see?
Sure. So, you know, we talk about the ADA funnel, which really, you know, the idea of before I can sell you anything, I have to get your attention. I have to get you interested. I have to get you to a point where you're making a decision, and then you have to take some sort of action. And for many years, the ADA funnel is really focused on the idea of the final A. It was the idea of how do I get you to take action?
Mm-hmm.
When we look at any funnel, we're looking at a wide gradient of different people. So you let's say you sell a consumer package good for the ease of just kind of using this model. You're going to have a wide spectrum. You're going to have people who have never heard of your product, and you're going to have people who are willing to buy your product the next time they go to the store or order it online or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But at some point, there's a different conversation. So, for example, the conversation you want to have with someone who has never heard of you is very different from the conversation you want to have with someone who's ready to buy from you.
Right.
And it's a different conversation than someone who's heard of you but really hasn't figured out what to do with that information. So there are different conversations that take place depending upon where those people are in the funnel. And what we're seeing, especially with social media, is an opportunity to engage the consumer at every phase. You know, and most of us are on a fact-finding mission. At least rationally, we believe we're on a fact-finding mission when we decide to make a purchase. Now, those of us who have been in marketing know there's a lot of emotion involved as well as to why people buy things. I often joke, you know, at some point in my life, I didn't really even know what an iPad was, and I certainly didn't need one, and then at some point, I really, really, really needed one. So, you know, when does that happen? Mm-hmm. And so part of that conversation and the persuasion that marketers bring to this of helping you say, look, you know, your life will be better if you own this product or if you buy this service is a big part of what goes on here.
You'll feel good. You'll feel good and avoid pain.
Exactly. We're all about avoiding pain. But what's interesting also is when we look at this traditional funnel, oftentimes after that point of conversion, it just kind of stops. You know, now we look back up the funnel to see who else is coming down. Mm. What we're seeing now, especially with social media, is, okay, you bought from us. What happens next? Are you going to rebuy from us? Because, by the way, we've already done a lot of work communicating with you and getting you to understand the value we bring to the table. So are you going to come back around and repurchase? Or are you going to say, I'm really unhappy with this purchase, and tell everybody you know how horrible we are, and that way they should never do business with us. You know?
Yeah, that would be good to know which they're heading for and what you can do about it.
Well, there's a lot of things we can do to manage expectations, first of all. I mean, if you're selling something to somebody that is not going to live up to the expectations, you may be setting yourself up for a fall. But the other side of this, of course, is just to monitor the conversation. And, you know, savvy marketers will do this through Twitter. They'll be looking for people saying things about them that maybe aren't so savory or kind. It's not a fun place to be from a marketing standpoint. Nobody wants to put themselves out there open to criticism. But there are also times when it works very much to any advertiser's advantage to be able to know what people are saying about you. So you should be part of whatever ongoing conversation is taking place on the web.
I think in your book, you mentioned the example of Domino's and how the CEO...
Domino's is a fantastic example, yeah.
So the CEO went way out on a limb and said, even quoted some of the very uncomplimentary comments that were being made.
And broadcast it as a television commercial. I remember the first time I saw it, you take notice. Because frankly, and sadly, it was so refreshing to have a company say, yeah, we asked you what you thought of us and you didn't like it. But here's what we're going to do to change. And the thing is it made such a huge difference for the perception of the marketplace for Domino's. It also made a huge difference in what Domino's was selling. Because, you know, look, if you go out there and you say, I get the other side. I mean, if we look historically, a lot of companies sat happily in their ivory towers looking down on the rabble thinking, hey, we're doing fine. But when you really go out there and say, how are we doing? Tell me honestly, and people will tell you, you're going to get a much different view of your business through their eyes. And this is an important consideration for anybody who works in any business, but especially marketing.
Well, it was certainly a good example of speaking directly to the needs of your customers. They wanted better tasting pizza.
Well, exactly. And I think the open kimono approach really is also refreshing because, you know, at the end of the day, we know as consumers that we're people. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of nice to know and feel like we are doing business with other people. And a lot of times companies hid behind the whole idea of a corporate identity, which is really kind of, it's cold and it's impersonal. Mm-hmm. And when a company is willing to come out and say, hey, we're just like you, we're people, we make mistakes, and we're doing what we can to rectify them, it's incredibly refreshing to hear. And, I know that some of the businesses that I most enjoy doing business with are the ones that are are not hiding behind that facade of, you know, we're a business and we don't have to pay attention, but are really right down there with you saying, hey, what can we do together? What is it that you want from us? How can we play together? You know, what can we do to make you happy?
And I think reorganizing the structure in those big corporations has made a difference. Where they have done this, where they have included people who are doing customer service, people who are doing the return on investment type of thinking. But it really was a struggle for them to get the C-suite to realize that it really mattered what the customer thought of the product.
Well, not only that, I think, at the end of the day, the C-suite wants to make sure that they're successful. They didn't necessarily know how to do that because, frankly, nobody had ever done this. But, you know, even at this point in time, just as a quick story, I had to call my insurance company yesterday. And, you know, I just had a quick question that I needed answered. And seriously, it took over 8 minutes for me to get through the menuing process only to have them tell me that they were closed for the day and I should call back at another time. You know, at some point, you figure someone would walk through the process saying, no, this is not going to work.
Right.
And, you know, why should I be the one to do the beta testing for them at the end of the day?
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I've run into that type of situation too, and in fact, the idea that people using their intuition and their people skills it's being worked against in many cases because the employees are given such scripted that even responses that they can make. So even sometimes when you do reach a human being, Their hands are tied in a way, or their brain is tied, that they can't, look and see the obvious simple solution. They've got to go through all this algorithm that the company set up.
And I had this conversation just the other day, and you are absolutely so right. It really is just I just need a quick answer, and 2 hours later, you're still on the phone with technical support because, you know, you haven't run across that portion of their script yet. Absolutely.
Well,
but to that point, it's, you know, once again, I think, and I don't necessarily want to classify, is it arrogance? I think in some instances, perhaps in the past, the businesses were, you know, self-deluded, believing that they were doing everything perfectly. But I think, you know, like anything else, because we have this interactive framework now that's available to us through online, we should be using it. Every business should be asking for some sort of feedback loop and looking at this data and saying, how are we doing? How are we doing? And if you're not doing so well, then you say, okay, well, how do we change this? How do we make things better?
Right. In regard to a vitamin company that I visited, it was... There was a real problem with, unfortunately, the manager at the store, but to report it, they didn't look at those. You know, someone else had told me at the store. Only corporate gets to look at what is being said about them. So it really made it much more difficult for it to have any impact.
Yeah, and the thing is you want to have the impact. I taught for many years as a college professor, and, you know, there are times when you have to sit down and look through the student evaluations of you. Mm-hmm. As we always said, it's always good to have a glass of wine first. Because, you know, the thing is that sometimes they're going to be brutally honest. And whether or not you are trying to not satisfy them, there are times when you are not satisfying them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as hard as it is to take criticism, it's also an incredible gift because once you have that understanding of how you're being perceived, you can do something about it. You can make the changes. You can do stuff so that future evaluations are not so hard to read through. And you're also doing a better job. And, I think at the end of the day, whether you're teaching college or running a business, nobody sets out to do a crappy job. Mm-hmm. They really want to do something that's going to be beneficial to the people that they're trying to reach because that's where longevity lies. I mean, we want to make a good living, but I don't think most people are trying to do it, as slapdash as possible.
So in order to get that for your enterprise, whatever it may be, what do you recommend that people do to help get that feedback?
Well, social media is such a key part of this. You know, any business, whether you are predominantly offline or online, is going to have an online forum of some sort through their website. And, you know, whether, look, it can be as old school as here's our 800 number. If you have any questions or comments, please call us, and we'll have somebody write this stuff down. At least you're getting that feedback loop. Or it could be answering a simple online poll, you know, just something to give us an understanding of how are we doing. But I think, you know, we want to assume we're doing well, but we don't often have that evidence. And so what we're going to do is say, give us evidence that we're doing what you want us to. And we can do it from a brand standpoint, too, through, you know, through Facebook and through, you know, Twitter feeds. Just put stuff out there. How are we doing? You know, open the kimono first. Ask people what it is that's going to make them happiest.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us on the Social Network Show. This has been Spider Graham, and talking about Taking Down Goliath, his book from Palgrave Macmillan. Spider, thanks a lot.
Dr. J, my pleasure, as always.
And thank you for listening. We bring you leaders in business, cyber citizenship, and the ethical, legal, and social implications of our networked, connected world. Please help us reach an even wider audience by telling your social network about this podcast. And in the meantime, please have fun and be safe, online and off, until you listen again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.